Kansas.
Powell down the right sideline. A desperation three is good, but it won't matter. How sweet it is. The Jayhawks march on to Omaha. Rock, chalk it up. Sweet 16, number 31.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to the show. I'm not trying to start anything, but why is it whenever we play clips from the broadcast, it's never Greg?
Are you asking me? Or
No, man, I'm looking right at Jake. Why is it never thing. Greg? I mean.
Because we get to hear Greg right here.
Nah, but I mean, you know.
I don't see Brian in here
right
at 9 o'clock
That's
on a
exactly
Wednesday.
Exactly right. You know, I'm just.
I just play the my favorite part of the broadcast. I mean, I have very little control on this show, but the little control I do have, I assert. And that's my favorite part of the broadcast.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, well.
Say how sweet it is, so then we can have you on the record saying that.
How sweet it is.
See there? There he is.
Did he say that right there?
Oh. Right?
That was get sweet. It? They went to the Sweet 16.
You heard it live and on tape. Okay. And still didn't register with you?
I have a short memory.
That's a good thing around here.
I don't listen to these guys.
Okay.
You got to have a closer's mentality on this show.
So now that we're through the first two rounds and Nate's no longer nervous and jittery, did you think that a 16 would ever beat a 1, like any time in the near future or really ever?
Yeah, I did.
But you didn't think it was going to be like that, right?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I thought it was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen this year. I thought that obviously there was a chance because of, you know, remember back in like November, Mercer, I think, went in and beat North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Some other teams like that had some weird wins. So it appeared that there were no just super teams, just great teams, and nothing against Virginia, but I didn't really look at them as the quote unquote number one overall seed.
We brought that up because their resume was so good.
Their resume was awesome, and just the eye test that they were whatever they had two losses. I think they had is that right?
One loss in conference.
You know, it just we all know how the tournament can go. You know, when you give teams confidence, and you know when it was 21 all at half, they gave them confidence. Even though Maryland Baltimore County wasn't leading, to hold Virginia to 21 and to score 21 yourself. And then have a little, you know, hope. Have a lot of hope, really. Say, hey, we're a little run away from taking a team that has trouble scoring and making a 5-point lead become 10, and that's exactly what happened. And the basket just got big. It was kind of like that Buffalo Arizona game where, you know, it was close, and we're sitting there watching it in Wichita, like, oh, you know, you figure Arizona goes on a run, but then Buffalo banks one in, and then. Then it hits all sides of the rims and goes in. It just balloons on you.
Do you remember that? Like I don't. That's the thing that stands about these upsets.
And not that we let facts get away of the actual point, but it was Wofford that went into North Carolina.
Wofford, okay.
Yeah. I could give it about North Carolina right now.
I would put Wofford.
Jake's our fact checker this morning.
I would take Wofford and Mercer and kind of.
Yeah, no.
That's the first fact he's checked in over a week, and you're the recipient of that. But is it so? You mentioned there's no super teams. How much is it? So you've seen plenty of 16 seeds because it seems like Kansas is always a one seed. Are 16 seeds getting better?
I think so.
Are they really?
You just look at the Vegas lines. You know those guys know what they're doing. And remember back when I was playing into the late 90s and early 2000s, those lines were like 28 or 30. You know, and now, I mean, our line against Penn was 13, mm-hmm. and I think it's not so much that we're not as good. I really do think that the Penns of the world, and everyone talked about them being, you know, they should have been a 14 or a 15, and in that first 12, 15 minutes, people seemed to be right. And then percentages caught up with them, and we started making shots. They didn't, and, you know, we went on to win. But in the Maryland-Baltimore County, I thought what made that so crazy is, as you really – dig back into their record throughout the year. I think it was Albany, and I'm sure Jake will check me on that, but I think it was Albany beat Maryland Baltimore County by like 40 and earlier in the year. And so there were some games in there were just shocking. It's just, you know, this wasn't like Maryland Baltimore County was undefeated in their league and they, you know, they shouldn't have been a 16. They were like the epitome of a 16 seed. And then to win by 20 is a shocking part. Now, granted, that was probably more like a 10 or 12 point, but at the end it just kind of just, you know, went nuts, and they had a couple dunks at the end and all that, but it was still 20. It's going to go in the record books as 20.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say is what stands out to me about this first weekend. We've seen upsets, maybe not a 16, but we've seen 15 seeds win and 14 seeds win in the past. But I don't remember them blowing people out. Like, Arizona got run. Yeah. That could have been 30, you know? And what was the other game we were watching that turned into a big blowout?
North Carolina got hammered.
North Carolina.
Yeah. Now, that was a little different because that was A&M. Texas A&M. We played A&M this year, and watching them, they had a weird year. They had a great start to their year. I think they got ranked. They were ranked like 6 or 7 in the country. Then they had some
front court, man.
They had some suspensions and some injuries, but you know, Robert Williams and Tyler Davis and their guard Starks, he really came on towards the end of the year, and so that wasn't as surprising because that's a good team that in November you would say, hey, this is a Final Four team. Now, we were able to take care of them, but it was one of those close games we had in the middle of January that we're looking at it and like, you know, that was a pretty good win, but people hadn't really bought into Kansas yet because we had the loss to Washington and the loss to Syracuse, to Arizona State, and things like that. So that one wasn't as surprising, but 16 versus a 1, that guy is going to go down in history. They're going to talk about that to all those kids and that coach for the rest of their lives.
Okay, one of the things I'm wondering if this could be contributing to more parity across college basketball from high seeds to low seeds is the expansion of transfers. There are so many more transfers, and this leads us to Clemson. We're going to get more on them in a moment, but I was reading this from Jesse Newell's bit about Clemson. They've got 5 of their top 8 scorers are transfers. And here was the quote from their coach, Brownell, because a lot of coaches have been complaining about transfers. We heard Tubby Smith go on a rant the other day about transfers. And he said when he was a younger coach, he had a problem with it. But now, quote, I think we ask so much of our players, and we can work them in the summer. We can do all these things with them, take all their time as kids, and then they play 8, 9, 10, 11 minutes as a sophomore and junior. I can understand it if a kid wants to go somewhere and start and play 28 minutes when he's done all the things we ask him to do in any program in college at this level. But I'm wondering if that means if all of a sudden you're the 7th guy for a blue blood or a big-time program and you're getting 10 minutes a game and you transfer to Clemson and you're getting 25 minutes a game, that all of a sudden makes the parity because all of a sudden the depth is gone for that blue blood and there's a more talented player at another school like Clemson. Do you think that's contributed to a little more parity?
Sure. I do, and I think that the blue bloods have benefited from it, and they get hurt by it, and the transfer rules haven't really changed. I mean, they're still got to sit out a year.
Right.
I mean, the graduate transfer was always there. It just has become more amplified because more people are doing it.
Yeah.
So nothing's really changed other than it seems that guys are okay with transferring. I think it was such a big decision back in the day to leave and set out an entire year. And that was what bugged people. And now it seems like kids are okay with it. I mean, hey, Kansas, we got 3 of them right now that are just practicing with us. We had kind of 1.5 last year with Malik Newman and Sam Cunliffe. So it just seems like they're more comfortable with the understanding that, hey, I'm going to go to college for 5 years. And I'm going to sit out and I want to play. You know, there's a correlation, too, in the – it seems like the amount of transfers have skyrocketed in the last 5 years. And what else has skyrocketed? NBA salaries. So it doesn't mean that the number of spots have skyrocketed. It's still the same. International basketball has become more of an option where you can go and make some money. But it's kids are just impatient. It's not, and not just kids, families. You know, everyone has entourages and people around them and handlers, and they're all barking in everyone's ear, hey, you're better than that guy, you're better than this guy, you need to go somewhere where you're appreciated. And that's been going on for 100 years, but now they're saying, hey, you're better than him, and if you go and showcase your talents at Clemson or at UMBC, hey, Lyles was a transfer at UMBC. He didn't start out there. He went to VCU with Shaka Smart and decided to, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else and get some minutes. And now he's a national treasure and might have an opportunity to play. Look at the NBA now and look at, you know, I used to be able to look at every roster and tell you that this guy went to Georgetown or this guy went to Michigan. Now you look at rosters, take away international players, you never know where they're from, but look at, there's guys from Grand Valley State and just, it didn't used to be like that. It's always been kind of the blue blood or the schools you recognize. It's guys that didn't even go to college that maybe just did 1 year of junior college and went to the league. So transfers have, there's a direct correlation in the amount of money that has just ballooned in the NBA. And then that goes hand in hand with handlers and entourages and families. And back in the day, you didn't really play as a freshman or a sophomore. At least I didn't. And
did you have a handler?
I guess, yeah. It was called my parents.
Do you have a handler now?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it'd probably be my wife.
What about Haney?
Who?
Does Haney handle you at all?
No. I mean, I drive him crazy.
Right.
Because I don't necessarily do things like by the book the normal way. Mm-hmm. Kind of show up when I want to, and he's right. Like, okay, we'll see you then, bud, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, I wouldn't be a very good guy to have a handler, I would think. not super organized, kind of flaky, kind of beating my own drummer.
Sounds like you need a handler. Maybe Haney could have a
I don't know if there's a lot of people lining up for that job.
Jake just raised his hand. I'm not sure.
I would never have a handler who wears a stocking cap indoors.
Well, there he is.
Because he's not a hipster. Nice.
How about now?
Oh, man. Put it back on. Looking?
What?
He's trying to go a whole year without a haircut, so things are going really well for him right now.
What's the reason for that?
Have you ever done
save
it?
Money? Don't you advertise
what is
some
the
haircut place?
What is the reason behind it?
Because my hair is sweet.
But there's no, like, there's nothing like a bet or nothing.
No,
like that.
There's no bet.
You're just married.
Prove people wrong.
You're married, right?
Are you going to donate it?
Negative.
Well, okay. Moving on. So Kansas beat Seton Hall 83-79. Yeah. You know what? It's an informational 9 o'clock hour on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You know, it's just, you never know when you're going to find something out.
Right.
So here you go, Greg. If I'd have told you before that game that Devontae Graham was going to score 8 points and Delgado was going to have 24 points and 23 rebounds and Carrington was going to drop 28,
one of the stranger box scores ever. I mean, we made shots. They didn't make him at the right time. You know, we kept playing from out front, and then they went on a crazy run in like the last minute 10 or whatever. I think Carrington had like 14 points in a minute. You know, luckily we were making free throws because the right guys were getting fouled. Bill, in a preemptive strike, took Doak out of the game, put Mitch in, and put him at the other end of the court so they would not foul Mitch, but good strategy, obviously, because it paid off. And Malik and Devontae, you know, it's funny. I think we were up four, and Devontae was at the line, and he had a forgettable night offensively. And he shot a front end of a 1-1, and it hit like the backboard first and the rim, and somehow kind of stopped there and went in. And if that ball doesn't go, it was a game of inches. I mean, another time we were up four, and Svi kind of threw a bad pass, but Devontae knocked it down, pitched it up to Mitch, and he got a dunk. But there were little things in that last minute that allowed us to win the game that could have gone the other way. It was a very strange finish, and Seton Hall, give them a ton of credit. They fought till the very, very end, and we were fortunate to get the win. It should have been a 10- or 12-point victory, but it ended up being four. But at this time of year, it doesn't matter. You know, cliche time, you win by one is all that matters. You advance and get to go to Omaha. So as Bill always calls it, a two-game tournament last week. Now it's another two-game tournament in Omaha, and it starts Friday night against a team that has got a lot of Kansas fans nervous because on Sunday after they got home from the game, they're watching that Auburn game, and they destroyed, you know, supposedly the best team from the SEC. They were up by 40 at one point in a 4-5 game.
Yeah,
so
it's another one of those blowouts.
I mean, it was crazy. I mean, Auburn was stuck on like 15 points for like 8 minutes. I mean, it was unbelievable, and Clemson just couldn't miss. So in watching that, you're hoping, you know, hey, they got all their big shots out of the way or something. But talk about a team going into Sweet 16 with a ton of confidence, it'd be Clemson.
So the big star of the Big 12 tournament backed it up with a big game against Seton Hall and Malik Newman. We talked, middle of winter, right around the turn of the new year, about how it seemed like he was struggling to kind of find his place.
Yeah.
He's found it? Like, what's...
You know, there's a lot of players that Bill, you know, gets on a lot during practice, and in November and December, it was Malik. And that was because Malik wasn't doing the things that made him the third-ranked recruit in the country and a big-time guy that looked like a surefire NBA guy. And then the Baylor game early in January, we're down, I think, 8 with like 3 minutes to go. He scores 12 straight points. And we're like, all right, here he is. Because I'd seen it all last year in practice. He made Frank Mason better last year. He made Devontae better. He was great for us last year. We're like, all right, this kid is going to step in and just be awesome. And it wasn't like he was awful. I mean, he was
right, averaging
double digits and doing some good things, but it wasn't just that explosive, consistent shooter and athlete that we thought we had. And then he'd show it to you in little, you know, short little segments, and that was the Baylor game. And there was a few others. But then he put it all together at the Big 12 tournament, and you're like, all right, now this is what we thought we had. Great in Kansas City, okay against Penn, only had 10 points, which kind of brought him back to the pack a little bit. But, man, he had a huge shot in that Seton Hall game at the end of the half. Then with about 3 minutes to go, I think Seton Hall cut it to 4, I think, and Bill called a timeout. We had a kind of a sloppy possession, not much going on, and he gets the ball in the right wing and just pulls up from 22 and makes a 3. Puts us back up by 7, and then he made another big-time play when he penetrated and didn't make a bad decision because 3 guys trapped him. He pitched it out to Svi, and Svi hit a 3. You know, in the Kentucky game when we played back in November, he continuously tried to challenge their length and got his shot blocked a bunch. And we're like, what is he doing? You know, this isn't, you know, Jackson, Mississippi anymore. These guys are big and long. And so he learned from that. And it took him a while. But, man, if he plays like that, how do you, if you're Clemson, how do you look at it and say, hey, man, what are we going to do? We're going to stop Devontae Graham. We're going to stop Malik Newman. We're going to let LeGerald, Bick, and Svi get open shots? Probably not. You got to come up with a way to figure out a way to contain all 4 of them.
Greg Gurley is in studio. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have Greg Gurley in studio. Nate Bucati is... What's Nate doing now?
I'm responding to a text message from our buddy Kevin Schenck, who's volunteering to be Greg's handler.
Oh, boy.
No, I'm all over that job.
Are you?
Kevin, when I was doing JL Television Network...
Sorry, Kevin.
...producer, director, and so he kind of...
It's going to be a bidding war.
He knows how difficult of a job it would be, so I'm surprised he would want it.
Hmm. He says he's ready. He's ready to back things off work-wise, and since you don't do much, he thinks it'd be an easy job.
That's why I'm fighting for it.
I mean, why do people? I mean, I'm a productive guy.
I think you are.
Look at you. It looks like you even showered before you came in here this morning.
Shaved.
Yeah,
that's a step forward.
Heading to Omaha today.
Everyone, come on out.
Old Market.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Omaha's good. Downtown Omaha's good.
Oh, it's a great town.
We're at that hotel. It's attached to the arena, so it's kind of nice. And just kind of park your car and hopefully don't see it till Sunday.
Okay, now see, this is the sign that we shouldn't let him talk right now because he's laughing
he's giggling,
he even says anything.
Yep.
So
should we
go ahead? No, go ahead.
No,
right.
Please. It'll just add to the uncomfortable comment
to
get.
No, please. You can't do that and then back off of it. Go ahead. Clearly, you've entertained yourself enough. Come on,
city I got engaged in there, Greg.
Omaha. Oh, yeah. Wow. A lot of good memories, I guess, that I just learned over commercial break.
Is it 10 yet?
What venue?
Wait, hold on. My phone says it 10.
Hello? What venue were you at? Is it a restaurant? Is it
Embassy Suites parking lot? Coach Doty will be joining us at 9:45, head coach of
quite a
Graceland.
Segue.
Graceland. Did you see the NAIA?
I did. I was watching ESPN Top 10 last night, and it was on there, so I kind of bounced around and saw that was pretty cool because I was listening to Jared Sutton was on with Kevin yesterday talking about how he was doing the game.
Right.
Kind of picked, it sounded like he said Graceland was the underdog more than likely, so it was cool to see them win. And that looked like a great atmosphere, that tournament.
There's like 7,000 people there, and it was awesome. And so a couple of Kansas City kids, one from Lee Summit North, the other one from Raytown on the team. And so we thought we'd have the coach call in at the end of the show and just congratulate him. That was great. 2 hours away from Kansas City, so a lot of Kansas City ties, a lot of alumni here in KC. So congratulations to Graceland for winning the NAIA Division I Men's National Championship. All right, so let's talk about what's ahead here in the Sweet 16. You mentioned Clemson, how good they looked against Auburn. Here's a team. They lost their second-leading scorer, Grantham, last week in January, and they struggled for a little bit. But, you know, unlike a team that loses their, loses one of their guys maybe in the conference tournament, they've had a chance to figure out how to play without him, and it looks like they're over that hump. And, boy, like you said, if you just watch that game against Auburn, they look like world beaters. What are some of the things that stand out to you about Clemson and the challenges they will pose for Kansas?
Well, they're from the ACC, right. So they're not going to be starstruck at this point. That never happens anyway, but they've played Duke and North Carolina and Syracuse and all these schools, so they get it. You know, they've been through a bit of a lull when they did lose Grantham, but they've obviously had enough time to redevelop some chemistry with the rest of the guys, and man, I mean, they made shots. They had great spacing. You know, I look at Auburn as, you know, don't take it the wrong way, but it seemed like kind of an undisciplined team. No. They didn't really, you know, they didn't really have any sets. It was a lot of one-on-one basketball, and it was something that Clemson took advantage of. I think they were really good defensively. They made things tough on Auburn, and then they kept pressure on them on the offensive end by making shots. And their big guy, Thomas, seemed like he ran the floor well and got a lot of easy buckets around the rim, and seems, you know, where Doak's more of a plodding center that kind of just hangs out in the paint, it seems to me that Thomas really gets out in transition, and that's going to be something that obviously our coaches will stress to our guys. And this team against Auburn like to run, and then they played fast, and they took transition threes kind of like we like to take. So to me it seems like two teams that are pretty similar. They like to space you out and run some sets and create opportunities, one-on-one opportunities. You know, it seemed to me that Auburn just tried to get the ball in a wing, and there'd be four guys standing around, and one guy would just play take them. And so we can't do that. That obviously didn't work. Now, the great thing is our offense is set up to do that, but with a lot of motion. Bill doesn't want a guy just holding the ball and just making a play. If you don't have a move to make, then take a dribble and do a dribble handoff or set a screen or do something, and that's where I think we can space Clemson out and do some things where, you know, yeah, Clemson's going to be hard to guard. Seton Hall was hard to guard. But on the flip side, they got to guard us. And it's going to come down to, like most tournament games, under 10 seconds on the shot clock, who's going to step up and make a play? I was sitting here last week telling you the exact same thing. And that's what happened, and that's what happens in NCAA basketball.
So they had to play Doak more than they wanted to, I think, in that game, because he was the one guy that had an answer for Delgado. But I think the good news is he played 22 minutes, and he was productive.
Hey, we would have taken 22 minutes from Doak back in December at times.
Right. I'm guessing that he doesn't average much more than 22 minutes a game. But now he's had an extra day to rest, too, because that was the Thursday-Saturday, and now you play on Friday. So should we expect pretty close to full Doak on Friday?
I think so. I went to practice yesterday, and he seemed great. You know, I saw him one time go up and get a rebound, and he landed on that knee and looked completely fine. So, and I think as you watch the Seton Hall games, and like you mentioned, you got that extra day. You know, you to a degree, you feel for K-State. They played on Sunday and then play on Thursday.
Right.
We played on Saturday and now play on Friday. So it's kind of there were some weird situations in the tournament last week. How about Wichita State? I didn't really realize it until the game started. You realize they played in San Diego at 10:30 in the morning?
Local time, San Diego
Local time,
time?
San Diego wow. time. I thought that was odd.
Yeah.
Usually the West Coast games are the night games.
Right.
But – no, they were the very, very first game at 10:30 in the morning. When was the last time you saw a game I'm not feeling sorry for them, but it, yeah. it to a, I guess I am a little bit. I look at that and I'm like, God, if we were stuck out in San Diego, now that's why we, you know, have been rewarded with Wichita and Omaha, and they, you know, weren't rewarded with a Midwest site or Dallas or whatever. But I still found that so hard to believe that West Coast game was at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that's stupid. But I do understand the pod system has caused these weird staggered schedules because, you know, you go to a site for the first rounds and it's not based on what region you're right. in. It's based on your pod. So you could be going to a completely different region the next weekend.
And they were in the East and it was in San Diego, which I get it.
So, yeah, that is tough for K-State, especially imagine how much they'd love to have 2 extra days to get Dean Wade back.
Now, it sounds like Dean Wade's going to play, at least everything I hear. But and they're going to need him. You know, their game's going to be difficult, obviously, against a team that's playing, that's used to March and is used to Sweet 16s and is on a roll. But give a lot of credit to K-State. They did what was very difficult to do. As crazy as that sounds, it's never happened before where you've had to play a 16 seed in the second round. But having to play the darlings of the NCAA tournament and really, you know, UMBC kind of made them look bad at times because it was a bad offensive game, but Snead and others came up with the steals and the things they needed to win. And again, that's all that matters is that they won. You know, that's the only thing that matters. It wasn't pretty, but they held them to what? 42 points, I think it was, or it was under 50.
43, 43, I believe,
was
the final.
I think we're all proud of the Big 12. I saw Devontae Graham tweeted out on Sunday, hey, don't hate me for this, but I'm pulling for K-State, go Big 12, which is the right thing to say. Some Kansas fans won't like that, but it's kind of, you know, we're kind of sticking our chest out a little bit that four of the 16 are from our league, and hopefully four of our 16 get to the Elite Eight. And we always, you know, again, pound our chest that we're the best league in the country. And, you know, in years past, that hasn't happened because we've had some early exits outside of Kansas. And, you know, as a Kansas guy, I'm glad. I know it's, you know, if we were playing them, I'd want to kill them. But, you know, if they can advance on, great.
And the atmosphere in Omaha is going to be fantastic. I was listening to Petro talk yesterday about how crazy the demand for tickets are. I mean, obviously because Kansas and then Clemson, but I mean Duke and Syracuse. I know Syracuse barely made it into the tournament, but I mean that's a marquee matchup, Duke and Syracuse, and so it should be an incredible atmosphere.
It's ACC tournament,
right?
With one extra, it's Duke always travels well. I don't know how Clemson will, but everybody's going to want to see that one. I think all the regionals are interesting because of. Of you know, even the one with Loyola and Nevada, you know, that's not exactly Blue Bloods, but people are going to be watching it.
And how great is that? Two kids from Blue Valley Northwest in that backcourt for Loyola Chicago. That's just fantastic.
You know, I remember talking to Clayton Cluster when he was stretching at Iowa State his freshman year, and he was really frustrated. He was like, God, I don't know. You know, I go, how you like it? You know, because I don't really know Clayton, but I went up, Kansas City kid. It's always cool to. To, you know, you kind of, again, stick your chest out when you want to see kids do well from this area because you want people to think that Kansas City is puts out some talent. And
worked out pretty good for him.
He goes, you know, he's frustrated. He wasn't playing, but you know who he was playing behind? Monte Morse.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, and in my semi-nice way, I'm like, well, you know, hey, bud, it might be tough to really win that over. I know you're good. And he kind of saw the writing on the wall and made a difficult decision and you know,
so we're talking about transfers, though. You know, kids at a Big 12 school, all of a sudden he's at Loyola Chicago, and he's knocking off teams in the NCAA tournament.
But it really was cool, you know, him playing for Ed Fritz, and everybody knows Ed from around this area.
He's, we had him in studio the other day. He was awesome.
He's done such a great job out there. And his wife, Ann, is the girls' coach at Blue Valley North, where my kids go. And so the Fritzes have made their stamp on Kansas City high school basketball. And it's cool to kind of – get that out in the national media with Clayton Cluster and Richardson having a really nice year. And then, you know, you look at their opportunity. They're playing Nevada, and Nevada's been great, but that's an even matchup.
I mean, the Final Four.
They could make a Final Four at Loyola Chicago, so a really cool deal there. proud of those kids and really happy for Kansas City.
How important is it to you that Petro is attending the Omaha Regional as a fan?
How important is
that? That's a big deal for you, right? I mean, you get a...
Anytime you can be around Saran,
right,
in a fan situation or a work situation, I think your day will be pretty average.
Right. Speaking of the devil, let's take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Here we go. 13.4 seconds to go. The Yellow Jackets with a chance to win it. Gracelet pushes it all the way back past half court. L.T. Davis has it. Swagger, 8 seconds to go. One-on-one. Top of the key. Five to shoot. L.T. Davis breaking down James. Drives. Inside. Kick outside. It's to Harley.
He got it!
It's good! The buzzer beater. Harley hits it. And Gracelin is your NAIA National Championship as he's being mugged on the court.
Unbelievable. L.T. Davis with a great attack and an unselfish play to make a pass to Justin Harley for the win. Unbelievable.
That was the game last night right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, called by Cody Tapp and Jared Sutton. And right now we have the Gracelin head coach, Craig Doty. I'm sure still... still celebrating the national championship. Coach, good morning. Congratulations. How much have you slept?
Steven, I've got about 3 hours of sleep under my belt, but you know, I make sure I'm up to talk to you guys. The excitement is flowing. This is just outstanding for our university and our community and for all our student athletes. So, you know, we're very blessed. We're very happy.
What a finish. What was going through your mind? Because LT Davis had the ball, he got double teamed, and then he dishes off to a wide open teammate, and Harley nails the three, a 30% three-point shooter, but it was all good after he hit that shot. What was going through your mind during that sequence?
Well, I mean, we had missed three front end of one and ones in that overtime period, and you know, at that point, we were done passing the basketball on on the offensive end. We weren't going to move it side to side. We were getting good looks. We were getting fouled. We just needed to keep the ball in LT's hand. Somebody who has now won three national championships, who's been in that situation over and over again, and we put the ball in his hands. He drew the entire defense. He made the unselfish play to pass it to Justin Harley, and you know, he created a wide open look for Justin, and Justin did the rest. And like you mentioned, 30% 3-point shooter. But when a kid has no chance to think about it, then there's second and a half on the clock, you know, he was able to really come up big time. Justin's an impressive person. He's 25 years old. Before he started going to college, becoming a college basketball player, he was an LPN and an oncology unit. I mean, he's one of the highest character kids I've ever coached, and what a big-time shot he hit.
You know, you mentioned LT has won three national championships now. You have two at Rock Valley College and now one at Gracelin. What is this past 5 years been like for you?
You know, the past 5 years, we've played in four national championship games. We did lose one of them in between our two national titles at Rock Valley. We're up eight at halftime, much like last night. I joked around with my assistants. I said, you know, I don't like being up eight at half in national championship games. And, you know, teams are going to battle back. It's just it's going to be a back and forth down the stretch, and that's what it was. But you know, it's been special. LT's been by my side for all three of those championship wins, and you know, one of my buddies posted online that it's the Brady Belichick combination of small college hoops. I don't know if that's quite the case, but I do know that, you know, while Tom Brady's getting older, LT's out of eligibility, so it may be time to consider retirement at this point.
I just walk away while you're on top. Hey, we got to ask you about the guy that led you in scoring in this game, because he's a Kansas City kid. And I love the name Will Nelson. I can't believe he doesn't go by Willie, but he's from Raytown High School, and he has 30 points. Do you ever call him Willie? Does anybody ever, or would he get mad at you? Like, what would happen if you did that?
You know, we have a couple different names. You know, we joke around about his personas. You know, his Raytown persona is Will Nelson, and then when he's around our campus, he's William Nelson, because he's so trim and proper. You know, he walks around like he is the mayor of the town, but of course, he's still... he's still a young kid. He likes to listen to hip hop music, and he certainly turns into Will Nelson whenever he's around his Raytown folks too. So he's an awesome guy, and he's a high character kid. he's a guy who interned this summer at the Kansas City Fire Department, and he's really setting himself up for career success. And Will is just, he defines what toughness and hard work is. He's really had to work on different concepts in defending and offensive action. And because of how hard he works and how hard he's had to study, it doesn't come natural for him in terms of studying the game and coming to him, but he's just really put the time in to understand what we want out of him. You know, he's our third option on offense, and it's really special when your third option can have that type of performance in front of his hometown on the national scene and ultimately lead us to a national championship. I can't say enough about Will Nelson, Willie Nelson, or William Nelson. They're all great guys.
And you know, you've got a couple of Kansas City kids on the roster, and you had a whole bunch of alumni in the stands. I mean, close to 7,000 people. You just had to be thrilled with that turnout and the support that you received. It had to feel like a home game. I know it's a short drive, but there was a lot of Kansas City people there that were pulling for Graceland. That was really a special atmosphere last night.
Absolutely. You know, we're our alumni base, you don't stay in a town of 2,200 people when you graduate from Graceland University. And plus, we have a campus in Independence as well. So, I mean, we're really spread out. Kansas City and Des Moines are our areas for our alumni base. We're just floods of them are located. So the fact that we could not only make it to the national tournament, because this crowd, it wasn't quite like it was last night in the other rounds, but it was still crazy. I mean, we drew at a high, high level, which last night they said was the highest total for a game in the national tournament since the NAIA tournament came back to Kansas City in 2002. So, you know, we're excited that we can rally our fans, we can rally our alumni base, we can rally our university and community, because this is what higher education is all about. It doesn't matter if it's the business, if it's the stock market. If there's confidence, if there's excitement, good things happen. And we're just thrilled we've been able to provide that for our institution.
So was there anyone left back on campus or back in Iowa last night? Was everyone down at Municipal Auditorium?
If anybody wanted to rob any houses in Lamoni, they would have been able to go in there and out, and nobody would have known. Everybody was gone. Everybody was in Kansas City, and what a special turnout it was.
Well, I'll tell you this. We're thrilled for you and the school and all the players and the support staff and everyone involved and all the people that were there celebrating. And congratulations again. We're so happy we had it live on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And thanks a lot for calling into the show. I know that I'm sure you had a great night celebrating, and I'm glad we could chat with you about this. And hopefully we'll see you right back here again next year, ready to defend your title.
Perfect. Steven, Nate, Greg, I appreciate you guys. Keep doing your thing. You're doing big-time stuff. We'll be in contact soon.
Thank you very much, Coach Doty. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you this. Enjoy him while you've got him, Graceland University. Two junior college national championships, an appearance in a national championship game at junior college up in Illinois, and now a national championship at the NAIA level. And I told you guys, listen to the interview and listen to him and everything else, he's got that it factor. I mean, that's crazy, that kind of success, right? Greg, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, what's the next step? What a great guy, and congratulations. That's such a cool deal. Municipal Auditorium, most Final Fours ever hosted in the country, right?
Yep. That's right.
To win it there, pretty cool and great for, you know, semi-local regional deal. Yeah. I'm sure there was a lot of people there. So congrats to Graceland.
That's right. And
Willie Nelson.
That's right. Willie Nelson, William Nelson, all of them. All three of them were fantastic last night. Jake, good job out of you. Greg Gurley, always a good job out of you. We've got several people that are candidates to be your handler now. A lot of people vying for this position, so you're really in the you're in the position of power now. You can pick and choose and decide what you want out of this position.
Please, Greg, let me handle you.
Yeah. I don't know about
that. I could have done without that.
I think that he just might have taken him out of the running there, but that's fine. Greg, have fun in Omaha.
I'll try.
Nate Bucati. You're going to say something smart ass.
Doesn't he have like a little.
He's waiting.
Come on.
Yeah, smirking.
I'm out. Go ahead.
That's a famous Nate smirk.
Say something to Greg. I know you got something.
Find a nickel for every time Jake was begging to handle some guy on the show.
That wasn't as good as I thought.
So it was you were the target. I thought it was going to be Greg. He went after Jake. That's real nice out of you.
if I had a nickel for every time I said I was excited to go to Omaha, I'd have about 10 cents. But actually, Omaha is, is a lot of fun.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Shots fired. Omaha.
Old market. No, I like it. I love
it. Studio audience wakes up for the first time in 4 hours. Hey, thanks for watching. Everyone have a great day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.